Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 119. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com. My co-host David Todd is tied up in New York again today. He had problems with a flight getting out of there, and he apologizes that he's not going to make this episode. So I'm going to fly solo once again. It's the off-season, and I invite you to stay tuned for the second part of this podcast. As I have a great interview that I conducted Thursday evening with former Pittsburgh Steelers kicker Jeff Reed, who of course is currently a free agent. He's not signed to an off-season roster right now. Jeff is working out back home in North Carolina, and he's not giving up playing football yet. And I think that you'll see. You know, whatever your belief was or thoughts on Jeff Reed heading into today, you know, a lot of people don't like, as eccentric as he was and all the problems, late in his career. Of course, a lot of people haven't heard from Jeff Reed really since the final media interview following the loss to the Patriots there. Back in 2010, where, the next week Jeff Reed was released after that. But, in all the interviews that I've heard with Jeff over the years, he was real open with me. And I think you're going to see this. Jeff doesn't hide, shy away from anything in this interview whatsoever. We talk about, the loss to the Patriots, his comments afterwards. A lot of his comments were deemed as kind of attacks on fans and the organization after that game. So, Jeff doesn't shy away from any questions that I ask him, and he talks about how he still hopes to catch on with the Steelers. Hopefully maybe this year. He admits that, training camp spots are unlikely for him right now at this time, because here we are in the offseason. Every team usually has about two kickers at this point. So, I'm not going to tease it any more than I just did right there, but I invite you to hang on in the second part of this interview, because I had, 25 minutes worth of Jeff Reed here, and then form your opinion after Jeff after that. And, I've got a post on the blog that went up Thursday evening kind of teasing the interview a little bit. I think the Steelers could do worse than bringing Jeff Reed in to training camp to compete with Sean Swisham. They got Danny Ratman there right now, but let's face it, do we think that Danny Ratman is going to beat out Sean Swisham for the job right now? Do we think he'll press Swisham in camp? And, for what it would cost to sign Jeff Reed, there's no risk there. If the guy, can pass an audition prior to him being signed, and compete during training camp, the Steelers have nothing to lose by doing that. So, once again, hang on for the second part of the podcast and listen to that interview. Of course, we're right here now after minicamp has concluded for the Steelers. It is the dead time of year. The NBA playoffs, of course, wrapped up Thursday night with the Miami Heat beating the Oklahoma City Thunder there. It's going to be dead right now. Let's face it. We are in the dead part of the season right now. There's not going to be a lot of news coming out. David and I plan on over the next few weeks of talking to a few of the beat writers around the division, kind of getting a feel of where each team is in the division that the Steelers will face this year, of course, a couple times as they do every year. So outside of that, the news kind of going around right now, there was news yesterday. Ralph Wentzel, former guard for the Steelers, passed away after suffering from Alzheimer's type dementia. I thought I'd heard that name before, and it did not take long, a quick Google research to come up with why. His wife, Eleanor Perfetto, I think it's pronounced, she was the first one to file a workman's compensation claim against the NFL for dementia resulting from injuries on the field back in 2010. She's been very active on some committees in front of the House and all like that, of trying to get players benefits and all like that for these players with head injuries. Ralph Wenzel was 69. He had been evidently living in an assisted living facility. He was originally, when you go back and look, he was originally drafted by the Green Bay Packers in the 11th round of the 1966 draft. Immediately, almost after that, he was traded by the Packers to the Cleveland Browns, where he did not stick very long at all. The Browns waived him, and the Steelers claimed him up, claimed him off waivers there. And he played 43 games, I think, with the Steelers. He'd go on to, and I think that was over five seasons there, four or five seasons. And he would go on to play his final two seasons with the San Diego Chargers. So it really is a sad story. The guy, after his playing career was over, went on to coach, coach in high school, and says here at North Carolina Central University in Durham, North Carolina, and another school in Washington, D.C. as well. And, I posted a video that came from the New York Times, kind of highlights, an article they had done on him a few weeks back, and it's real sad. But at least, the guy is in a better place now, it seems, and his name will probably be attached for a long time, because I don't think Eleanor is anywhere close to being done with her fight whatsoever. I've included some links at the bottom of that post as well too, to kind of give you a backstory on it. But Ralph Wenzel dead at 69. So, our thought, once a Steeler, always a Steeler. Our thoughts and prayers, I'm sure, from everybody in Steeler Nation goes out to that family there. So, going a little bit further around the league here, looking at some news, Dan Rooney, there was an interview done by the BBC, of course, updating the thoughts of possibility of a game taking place in Ireland, possibly as soon as 2013. And, we really hadn't heard much about this since, I think, the beginning of the year. Obviously, 2012, it's not going to happen this year. And with good reason, too. They got the Olympics going on overseas this year. I think the plans were not even close to being finalized of the location. Hopefully, they hope it to be in Croke Park in Ireland. And Dan Rooney is still very hopeful that this takes place, being, of course, that he is the current U.S. ambassador to Ireland. How much longer he's going to be there in that position, there's rumors that's going to come to an end soon. I would fathom probably around election time or something like that. He'd be back in Pittsburgh in a full capacity there. But I think a lot of fans are concerned that this would be a home game that the Steelers would be given up to play over in Ireland. I've read to the contrary on that in some of my previous posts you'll read back. Because of the lease agreement, I think, with Heinz Field, I don't think that they can give up a home game. And I think if this game was to take place, it would be the Steelers playing in that game as a visitor. So I know there's a lot of grumbling right now as far as that goes. I would not expect Steelers to give up a home game. How do I feel about this either way? As long as it's not a home game, I don't see a problem with it. Rooney's with their Irish tradition and all like that. I think the last time was, the American Bowl. They were over that way, I think, and just spreading the word of the game. And like I said, as long as it's not a home game, which I'm willing to bet it won't be, I don't have a problem with it. But it's not locked in stone that the Steelers are going to play in that game anyway. So, just something to talk about here during the off season. Some more kind of overseas news. Looks like James Harrison, Brett Kiesel, Charlie Batch, a few of those guys are over in Mexico. doing a trip over there. So, you know, that's something to talk about. Brett Kiesel said in his interview on DVE Radio that the beard is in full strength and all. You know, so any fears about that? I mean, yeah, that thing should be massive by the time playoffs roll around towards later end of the season. So, you know, not too much to garner out of that. You know, that news right there. Ben Roethlisberger reportedly, I think, is overseas playing golf now. I think there was a report on Twitter that he's teed off at one of the courses there. He was supposed to meet with Dan Rooney over there too, have breakfast over there before he teed off. Whenever being over there in Ireland. So, you know, I would expect some media coverage maybe from Roethlisberger trip over there, maybe over the next few days as well, moving forward. But let's see what else there is out there. The NFL Network, of course, is finishing out their top 100 players of 2012. If you've heard me talk before on the podcast, I'm not a huge fan of these lists. I know I think it was ESPN last year during a lockout, you know, had list on everything, ranking players and all like that. I think the preface of the top 100 players of the NFL Network is good. I just have seen so many players claim that they haven't voted on this. So, you know, are we talking about 50 players that voted on these players? Or are we talking about 100? You know, I just have this funny feeling that a lot of this ended up being NFL Network rankings on this. And, of course, it's going to invoke discussion. It always does, no matter where the list comes from. But just a quick recap, Troy Polamalu was the top-rated Steeler on this list this year, ranking 19th overall. Last year, Polamalu finished 6th overall. So the other guys that finished on this list this year, Lamar Woodley finished 63rd. Marquise Pouncey was 49th. Mike Wallace, 47th. Ben Roethlisberger, 30th, and James Harrison, 29th. About the usual suspects that you would expect to show up possibly on this list. Kind of surprised Antonio Brown did not crack this list at, I don't know, in the 90s somewhere. You know, of course, you know, you can make a debate either way on that, but I really thought his season was kind of deserving of that. But once again, just something to talk about during the offseason there. What else do we have? We got a couple articles up here. Jeremy Ritz has his second prediction of the Steelers season going game by game. Jeremy, of course, did one back in April prior to the draft. Kind of gives his thoughts on where the Steelers will be game by game. He'll be doing another one of these. I will too, except I'll be doing mine right after the final cut down date is and all, but I invite you to read that and get Jeremy's thoughts on where the Steelers will finish based on where they are right now at this point before they head into training camp. Chris DeMarino, too, you might have he's doing a game-by-game schedule preview of the Steelers' 2012 opponents, and he's got his Broncos one up. I think his Eagles one will be, or his second game one will be coming up any time now. And he's going to take a game-by-game look at the opposition, who they lost, who they gained in free agency, and stuff like that. So, you know, from now on until training camp gets open, we're going to have a lot of these type things. I've started my training camp roster battles already. You'll be seeing more of these over the next few weeks. Cornerbacks is the early one that I hit on. It's pretty obvious, you know, with the loss of William Gay and Bryant McFadden during the offseason, your four guys that are going to, you know, locks to make the 53-man roster are Ike Taylor, Keenan Lewis, Curtis Brown, and Cortez Allen, of course. Will they keep 5? Will they keep 6? I think that's yet to be determined. Steelers' last few years, I think, have kept 6 cornerbacks on the roster. Right now, the candidates, and this could change at any time. You just never know what's going to happen. Roster moves from here until training camp gets underway. Terrence Frederick, of course, a 7th-round pick out of Texas A&M, is an obvious candidate to have the inside track at possibly one of these spots. Terry Carter, we heard a lot of good things kind of coming out of mini camp, I think, on Terry Carter, the undrafted free agent out of Louisiana Tech. I think he had a handful of interceptions there. a little bit taller, just slightly than Frederick there. Frederick, I deem more as a nickel corner type at the next level. Carter, on the other hand, I think he could play outside or inside. That should be a good battle there. There's a good chance that both those guys can end up making the 53, especially if they're able to contribute on special teams. Because let's face it, neither any of these fifth or sixth corners, they're not going to see the field on defense, barring quite a few injuries. Let's hope that does not happen. They're going to have to show upside in training camp. They're going to have to show a strong ability to play special teams. We saw what Curtis Brown, the impact that he can make last year on special teams. If any of these guys, make a contribution early on in special teams, it's going to help their chances to make the roster. Walter McFadden, of course, he's floated around. He was originally signed to the roster by the Steelers after the 2011 season ended. He was originally drafted by the Raiders in the fifth round of the 2010 draft. His rookie season, he had a horrible game against the Miami Dolphins there in what was ended up being his most playing time of the season for the Raiders there. And from what I've seen on him on tape right now, this guy's bounced around with Jacksonville and the Bengals on their practice squad. He really doesn't seem anything more than a camp body right now, more of a nickel inside back, if you ask me. To me, he really would have to blow up big time to have a chance to make the 53-man roster. Andre Freeman is a kid from Slippery Rock that got signed to the roster kind of late, undrafted. This could be a dark horse guy. Combine or actually pro day measurements come in 5'10 and 5'8. I played outside in college. Recorded 23 tackles, one interception, and two pass breakups in seven games at Slippery Rock last season. Really not too much. Another kid that we just don't know too much about. We're going to have to, and like the rest of these corners, these young corners on the roster, we'll learn more about them through training camp, through some of the media reports. We'll start learning what rotation they're getting in, and we won't really get a good look at these guys as fans ourselves until the first and second preseason game. So it's great to speculate right now on these guys. We're going 100% off of what the media has told us, and really there hasn't been a lot of talk about any of these guys. So it's good to speculate. I'm just going to be giving you recaps as we go through these things, position by position, of who the guys I think are the lock and who are the guys that are battling for spots on the 53-man roster moving through. So I think that pretty much wraps up where we're kind of at right now in the off season. As always, anything that hits the wire, anything worth talking about. Oh, I forgot this too. Mualdi Moore signed on with the Indianapolis Colts this past week. Not surprising. Knows the Bruce Arians system. Going to be more of a third down change of pace back there if he makes the 53-man roster. Mualdi can, of course, play some special teams, I would suppose, at this time in his career. We'll have to see how that shakes out. I wouldn't call him a lock to make the Colts 53-man roster. I think he does qualify, though. Should he make the 53-man roster as a compensatory pick there? So at least maybe if he makes the 53-man roster with the Colts, plays in a handful of games, the Steelers are looking at least a seventh round compensatory pick, depending on how he performs from there on out. The compensatory pick could get greater. I would not expect it to. So I think that covers it right now as far as where we're at, as far as where David and I left things off on Tuesday. I'm really excited of it, and as I said, I'm really excited about this interview with Jeff Reed coming up next here. Listen to it thoroughly. I think it's a little bit different look at Jeff Reed than what you've heard in the past. Jeff, as I said, was real open here. I was excited to do the interview with him. I was not did not know what to expect in the interview, but it came off better than I could even have imagined. And I'd like to thank some of the friends of Jeff Reed for making this thing happen. And without further ado, here's Jeff Reed, former Pittsburgh Steelers kicker and two-time Super Bowl champion. And folks, have a great weekend. David and I will see you back on Tuesday.
Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast. Today's guest, you're going to recognize most definitely 8.5 seasons with the Steelers. As a kicker, he ranked second all-time in Steelers history with 919 career points. Two-time Super Bowl champion with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm, of course, talking about kicker Jeff Reed. Jeff, welcome to the Terrible Podcast.
Oh, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me.
Jeff, let's get right to it. What have you been up to this offseason? As I understand things, you just wrapped up kicking camp, I think, with the National Kicking Service in North Carolina.
Yeah, it's a 3-day camp, two nights. You know, it's actually when I was a soccer player, I learned how to kick at this camp back in my rising senior year in high school. It was the first time I ever kicked a football. And I learned some fundamentals from the guy. He's real old school, but he's it's a fun camp. It's all kickers and punters and snappers. And, you know, it's one of the things I get back to, you know, because I know that's, you know, I made a lot of money and I had a lot of success, and I think it stemmed from this guy.
Now, obviously, you're trying to work your way back to the NFL with the team in 2012. Someone like you, Jeff, that, you know, you've kicked for so many years. Do you find yourself having to work more right now on technique, or is it conditioning, or is it both? You know, kind of let our listeners know, you know, what you're having to work on most right now.
You know, I have a lot of friends that, you know, ever since the lockout, you know, my career kind of took a turn for the worse as well. And had a couple things happen to me, obviously, in Pittsburgh that I overcome. And, you know, that's life. We all live and learn. But I think, you know, I have a lot of guys that just said, you know, like, I just go have a good time, enjoy life, and I'm over football. But, you know, when I wake up every morning, I train from 6 a.m. to about 8:30. And it's not that time. It's about two to three hours. And I have a personal trainer at the studio here in Charlotte, North Carolina. And, I mean, it's 5 days a week, and I kick on Sundays as if I was playing in a game. Not around 1 o'clock, actually, is when I kick. So, in this time of year, it's not in the 90s in North Carolina. So, it's a challenge to be in shape and, you know, endurance and, you know, be hydrated, all that stuff, those things. But, I mean, it's basically what it's frustrating because I'm getting no paychecks. I'm not getting too many phone calls. I've had a few bites here and there, but nothing serious. And, you know, when I go out every Sunday and I see myself getting better because my personal trainer is not just a guy who's keeping you in shape. He's a guy that makes you better at what you do because he studies film. So I've just been, you know, I don't kick too much, but I'm not going to – when I go out every week and I showcase to myself, my trainer, my father comes with me, sometimes my mom, maybe a couple local kickers that are trying to make it themselves that are younger. You know, it's a competition, but I compete with myself. And I really enjoy it.
I got you. Now, of course, a lot of Steeler Nation has not really heard from you since after the Patriots game in 2010, which, of course, after that game led to your release. After that game, you had some pretty strong comments that you know, were run all over the media and all like that. And pretty much you referenced the turf there at Heinz Field, the fans and the media. Do you think that any of those comments that you made after the game kind of expedited your release, or do you think that was a decision that was already made? I guess what I'm asking is if you would have went more of the cliche route with those interviews after that game, do you think you would have been given another week maybe?
Bottom line is, when I look at that stuff, there were some things misinterpreted by people in general, by the media, of course, but that happens. You know, I'm a journalism major. I understand that. They're looking for stories. If I say something kind of confrontational or a little bit negative, you can put a spin on it and make it say Jeff Reed hates the Steelers, Jeff Reed hates this. I mean, it's not me. You know, I go back to Pittsburgh and visit all the time. My sister still lives in my townhouse. You know, I have a million friends on the team in the organization. I keep in touch with Coach Tomlin, you know, a couple of the coaches, a bunch of the players. And I know it's a very different team there now, but it's one of those things. I don't really regret anything. When I look back, I just want people to know that the fans, that there's nothing on them. You know, the only reason they ever were negative towards me is because they know what I'm capable of doing, and I understand that. And I know what I'm capable of doing, so if I had a bad game, you know, it's frustrating to me. And I don't have anything wrong with the fans. I think the fans are great. I tell people to this day, and I haven't played there in 2 years, that there are no bad. I played in San Fran and Seattle, and San Fran, you know, it's an old school organization as well, man, but there's nothing better than playing for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And do I want another shot? Heck yes, man. I wish I was in Pittsburgh, but, you know, it's not on me. You know, I know my talent can take me to greater heights, and I could be the number one leading scorer in Steelers history. I could have the number one percentage in Steelers history. I could do all that, but, you know, it's not up to me. It's all about timing, and they've moved on, and I don't think the comments had too much to do with it. I think I could have kept some things to myself, but, you know, there's in the media, you're always taught to say the right things. And for 8 years, I said the right things. I got a little frustrated with a contract dispute. I got a little frustrated with, you know, missing a short field goal. And you know, I may have put some blame on the field when I should just say, you know, I missed, man. You know, life goes on. And, you know, it's just one of those things where I don't look back and say, man, I wish I didn't say that. I just wish people understood. You know, that's it. But at the same time, you know, I miss the team. I miss the organization. I miss the Rooneys. I miss Coach Tomlin. I miss Coach Cal. All those guys, you know. Like, they built me a career. They gave me a foundation to start my life. And I'll never change. And I'll never, ever dog the organization. I was a little bitter at first, especially they went to the Super Bowl the year I got cut. And I felt like I had something to do with that in the early games. Although I missed a couple kicks against the Ravens, that, you know, I want back, but you can't have them back. You know, it's just things like that. But I don't have any hard feelings, man. I had a good conversation with Kevin Colbert, you know, a month ago, you know, on the phone, and over 30, 45 minutes, and I have no hard feelings toward the organization. I just want another chance, and I don't think they had already made up their mind, but I think they saw me struggle a little bit as far as percentage wise, and not necessarily kick to kick because I had my games that I was on and off, but. Overall, you know, I'm really proud of myself as far as statistically and kicking in the conditions I kicked in. And overall, it doesn't matter if I was in a dome. I'm proud with my, you know, being 82, 83% for my career. I just know that I have plenty left in the tank, and that's what bothers me. It's not that I'm bothered by the organization at all. And, you know, I want the fans to know it's not a knock on them. Sometimes you're getting your feelings, you say the wrong things, you regret it. But bottom line is I don't regret a thing. I just want people to know where I'm coming from, and I appreciate the support and the foundation the Steelers gave me to start my life.
Yeah, and actually, in that interview, too, you made sure, you said a couple times, it was just only a small portion of the fan base that were on you and Dan and Greg Warren and all like that, too. So, you know, it wasn't like you were saying, hey, it's the entire fan base. So, you know, I just want to clarify that you were not calling out the entire, you know, the fan base
and,
as a whole.
And you know, and like I said, what I said in my interview was the 5% you always hear. But what I also said in this interview is I only hear that because they know what I'm capable of. And yeah. I know what I'm capable of. So, it, you know, I feel their pain because I'm experiencing that as well. And the last thing I would ever do is miss a kick on purpose or miss a kickoff on purpose or miss a tackle on purpose because I have too much pride for that. I'm a competitor and I always will be. You know, I'll go play, you know, PlayStation with somebody, and I won't talk to them if they beat me in a game. You know, I'm a competitor.
Right. You're an Aries too. I'm an Aries, so I know how that is. So
yeah, so I mean, that's the last thing anyone should ever think. And you know, when I go back to Pittsburgh, I'm welcomed. I go to a restaurant, I go to a bar, I go to the gas station. Man, there's people shaking my hands, and it makes it feel good. You know, because I played there a year and a half ago, and you know, it's been a tough road for me the last couple of years. I'm very fortunate. I got 2 Super Bowl rings. I was a team captain for 2 years. You know, I have a lot of great things I can talk about. But I just know I have something left in the tank, and if I didn't, I would have already given up by now.
What suggestions were you making to them on the playing surface in Heinz Field?
All I ever said, because they actually asked my opinion because I was a captain. I don't know if it was valued as much as another person's opinion, but I know turf is way worse on your body than grass. And I understand that. I want to kick on grass every day I can kick. All I was saying is it's just, you know, I just think that, you know, there's too many games played on it. I think if it was just our team playing, Pittsburgh playing on it, Pittsburgh Steelers playing on it, no high school, no college. And I know it's a moneymaker, so I understand where the Rooneys are coming from. It was never a knock on them. My only thing was, you know, when you plant your foot in the spot where the ball's supposed to be moves over 2 inches, that affects the whole kick. And it's an excuse, yes it is. Because I've done it for years, and I've also made plenty of those kicks. So it's an excuse. But when you look at the big picture of things, you know, it affects your job, and it's not like I was saying I'm a bad kicker there. It's like, you know, my foot's on the ground, the ball was placed on the ground, the turf shifted, so I barely even hit the football and missed a short field goal, you know, stuff like that. And I just think that it should be, I should have either been replaced more often, or there should be less games played on it, and that was it. You know, I mean, because I think if there's 8 games plus the playoffs and plus 2 preseason games of the Steelers playing on there, I think that field would be in fine shape. I mean, it's tough enough to kick over the conditions, but
right. There's
wind, there's rain, there's snow a lot of places, you know, so you can't say that.
Right, and you've kicked all over, you know, in your time in the NFL, a lot of different stadiums, probably all of them. I haven't checked and see if it was all of them, you know, in your many, many games. But is Heinz Field the toughest stadium in the league to kick in?
I think it's that and Cleveland. Cleveland's turf's a little off as well, but it's, you know, coming off Lake Erie right there, it's extremely tough to kick there. So I have much respect for all the kickers for sure, but Phil Dawson, you know, I don't think he gets enough respect because he been kicking there for years and still is still the kicker there. And that place can be tough. I mean, there was a game there when I was -27 wind chill or something. We lost that 13-6 or something. I made 2 kicks, but the second kick, I was so completely frozen, I didn't even feel the ball off my foot. It just kind of made it. You know, it was just one of those things. But I mean, you don't stop a game for anything because both teams are playing it. It's just. I also think even in environments like Miami where the Dolphins play, although the Marlins have a new stadium, you know, it's tough kicking off that baseball there in Oakland, and, you know, that's tough.
Right.
I mean, because you have a cleat on for the grass, but really on that dirt you should have like a little, you know, Dolph kind of shoe on, you know, on your plant foot because you don't need a big cleat. So, I mean, it's little things you deal with. I mean, it was tough in San Francisco. The ball didn't fly well. It was, it was gloomy. It was a thick air. I mean, you cross the ball, go 50 yards maximum on a field goal, you know, and you think you kick a great kick and 51 yards short. You know, it's just one of those things. But nothing's easy. I don't even think kicking that dome's easy because it's a pressure league, and I understand there's 32 kickers in the 32 people in the entire world that do what I did for 9 years, and I understand that because I know 10, 15 guys myself that should have had opportunities and never got opportunities. So I can't complain, but it's just, I think it, to answer your question, Heinz Field is easily top 3.
Gotcha. You hear, and you kind of answered this a little bit earlier, but you hear players, Steelers players all the time after they leave Pittsburgh, whether, you know, whether they're released or whether they retired or whether they just, you know, leave via free agency or whatnot. They always say that, you know, once they leave the Steelers organization and get into another locker room, you know, how much more appreciation, I guess, they have for the way the Steelers, you know, locker room and the organization is run. Do you pretty much feel that same way, you know, after all the, you know, couple years away?
Yeah, dude, man, I told you I was extremely bitter. You know, I was, I wasn't saying, man, I hate those guys because that's not me. You know, I had a ton of friends and I like to see them win and do well. But I was bitter, man, you know, because I felt like I contributed a lot. But it was time for me to, I guess, you know, start over or in that case, you know, move on. And that's what they thought. That was their plan for me. So that was my plan. I had no say in it. So, you know, I think that, when I look back now, because it was a whole season off and then about, you know, seven, eight games, I look back, man, and there's nothing like it. You know, I was only in San Fran for 6 games. I was in Seattle for the preseason. Both good locker rooms, both quality teams, in my opinion. And obviously you saw the San Fran last year. They went a long way. But the camaraderie in Pittsburgh is like a college atmosphere. And, yes, we know the NFL is now a business. You know, for the first 5 years I saw the loyalty aspect of it, but as you get older and you cost more and you're successful, which success is good, but you also, with success comes getting paid more. And, you know, I understand the aspect of it. I was bitter, like I said, but I look back and, you know, I walk in that building every time I come back to Pittsburgh, just shake a few hands and they make me feel like it's home, you know. So, and I don't think, you know, especially as a kicker, to be honest with you, and I'm not knocking the kicking position, but I know how some people view it. When you walk into a facility and 30 out of the 50 guys in there come up to you, and then the trainers give you a hug, and the head coach comes down to greet you, you know, that's respect, man. So I have much love for the organization.
Do you think, as you're attempting here now to latch on, you know, somewhere in 2012, do you think the way the media maybe has perceived you or presented you over the years, do you think any of that right now is kind of hampering you from other teams possibly, you know, wanting to bring you in to take a look? Do you have Do you get that feeling at times?
Do I think so? I don't know. Do I think it should matter? Heck no, man. I see stuff pop up every day about fights, about someone beating a woman, someone doing this, someone doing that, you know, like, and I mean, that's life. Like I said, we all live and learn. Who knows what happened in certain situations? But I also believe that what happened in my situation, the true story wasn't told, so that's life. I'm okay with that. I accept it. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. I did something I shouldn't have done. However, if the true story was told, and, you know, one day it will be, then, you know, maybe people understand. Maybe they still won't, you know, agree with what I did, but it's okay, you know, because I see things happen every single day this off season. And then some of the things that happen to some of these guys, they get these huge contracts. But, you know, they're awesome players. And, you know, it's a what-have-you-done-to-me-lately league. So you can't go out and do something crazy and murder someone or something. But, you know, if you have a little dispute or, you know, you go to a bar and get a little rowdy, I mean, it's whatever. It's life. You know, we all live and learn. So I don't think it does. But if it does, you know, it kind of stinks looking back. Cause it's like, I can't take it back. I'm a different person. I get up every morning at 5:30 a.m. I train. I go to the pool in the summertime. I hang with my parents. I live with my parents. You know, I'm not out in Vegas, you know, 2 months straight, you know, blowing all my money. You know, it hurts me more than anything because my family doesn't come from money. So the money I make, I try to help my sister, my mother, and my father, you know, and because I see my dad working his tail off, he gets $50,000 a year. I see my sister working her tail off. She doesn't get paid what she deserves, and my mom's retired. You know, so that's the way I do things. So I'm not ready to give up. I know I have a lot left in the tank, and I know no matter where my next step is, I'm going to be successful with something. I just hope it's in the league one more time.
Is there one kick that you've made in your career with the Steelers that you know, sticks out the most in your mind? I mean, is there one thing that you play over in your head or most of your big kicks kind of grouped together?
You know, I honestly view that as every kick is a big kick. And I know it kind of sounds like something you're supposed to say, but I really do. Like, I mean, playing in the Super Bowl kickoff, which is the opening kickoff, which is, unless you kick it out of bounds, is really irrelevant. But when you're blinded by, you know, flashes from cameras, that's pretty cool. You know, that's something I can always, you know, fall back on. The certain field goals, like game winners, those are great. Those are awesome. I mean, I get too much credit for game winners, I think. I think kickers should not get credit. Yeah, it's a huge kick, and it's a nerve-wracking situation, but if it wasn't for your teammates getting you in that spot and hanging in the game and keeping it close, you wouldn't get that opportunity. So, and on the flip side of that, when you miss a kick that's a big kick or you miss a couple kicks and you lose by three, it's not the kicker's fault. However, you're supposed to make those kicks, so I see that side of it. So I think, I've kicked, you know, hundreds of kicks, and I don't think there's one kick that I remember more than another one because I think that every kick's important. And it could be the first drive in the first quarter, or it could be a game winner, like the Miami game when, you know, we're in a monsoon and it's 0-0, and I make a field goal with 17 seconds left and 1-3-0.
Right.
You know, so it could be that, you know, so you just never know. But the way I view things and the way I take pride in things is I got to make every kick. I'm not satisfied. I don't care what the conditions are. That was the way I played the game. That's why my teammates respected me, and that's why to this day they keep in touch with me because they know that I laid it on the line every time I could.
I'm wrapping up here with Jeff Reed, Pittsburgh Steelers kicker for 8.5 seasons, currently a free agent looking to play in 2012. Jeff, what is one thing that Steeler Nation does not, after all your years with the Steelers, what is one thing that Steeler Nation does not know about Jeff Reed that might surprise him?
I think one thing, I mean, I don't think anything would surprise me, you know, because I'm pretty eccentric, man. I had some fun. I had some crazy hairdos. You know, I was actually feel kind of famous for a kicker, you know, because,
yeah, sure.
You know, most kickers are the dorks that sit in the corner that no one talks to, and I fit right in that locker room, you know, and I keep in touch with the biggest of names and, you know, try to keep those guys, you know, happy. You know, it's not about money, you know. About relationships, and I think the one thing that people don't understand is how much pride I took in the community, especially in Pittsburgh. I did it everywhere I played, but when you're somewhere for 9 years, you know, I didn't get much credit necessarily to say, because a lot of charity events, you know, there's a lot of guys that go, and the bigger names get gets, you know, airtime. And I don't think enough can be said about what I gave back to the community. And I continue to give back to the community. Whenever I go to Forward Lanes over there in Squirrel Hill, you know, I shake hands, I sign autographs, I take pictures, because it's like, those are my roots. That's where I came from my second year, first year on, you know. And I appreciate people respecting me, but I appreciate it more that, I mean, I can walk into a hospital and people jump out of their hospital bed and give me a hug or shake my hand. You know, that's very moving to me. So I think the one thing people don't necessarily know about me, maybe a handful do because they're involved in it. And I give a shout out to Michelle Rosenthal for Mike Marchinsky, that still worked for the Steelers, that, you know, gave me the opportunities to get involved in a lot of organizations. I never had my own charity, but I was in the middle of a lot of them. And, you know, it's very touching. And you realize how fortunate of the person I am. And I complain about the little things that I can control. And these people can't walk, they can't see, they can't hear. You know, you get tears in their eyes, they have cancer, you know, whatever it may be. And I think that's the one thing people don't know about me, is how much pride I took in the community.
And that doesn't sell newspapers either. That's why you don't hear that stuff, unfortunately, more. You know, it does me good, you know, to you know, when a player is, you know, like what Ben does with the K-9s and stuff like that, you know, little things like that. They ought to get that out more than they do, and you're right on that. And right. It's good that you got that info out. You mentioned that you've been in contact with Kevin Colbert. Any other fires burning right now, and where are you nailing them from right now?
My agent's in touch with every team, of course. I mean, I don't think there's too many spots open, to be honest with you, but, you know, injuries happen. Mishits happen. I can't really say that I'm going to be in a training camp. You know, I hope so. You know, all I do is pray every day that, you know, God lets me know my next step, you know, and that's just the way it is. You know, I really do believe in everything happens for a reason, and I'm going through a lull in my life that really, it's frustrating, and it challenges me every day. There's some days I just get up and I'm like, man, why am I working my tail off so hard? I may never play again. But then I look at the other side of that, and I'm like, I'm working hard, really, really, working my tail off really hard right now. I may get a call tomorrow, tonight. Who knows?
Right.
I mean, you just never know. So if I didn't have the talent, I would move on and say, okay, let me use my journalism degree. Let me go to radio. Let me do this. Let me do that, because I can do it. But when you're given the talent, you do it. I mean, I don't think you just fell into interviewing people and being on the radio and doing websites and stuff like that. I think that's a talent. You right. can't just jump in that and say, oh, I can do this. You know, so that's the way I view it. And as far as, you know, where I'm kicking from, you know, I just did a kicking camp that we talked about earlier here in Charlotte. I made a 60-yarder, and, you know, no wind. Obviously, it was nice and warm and muggy, so the ball flies a little better, a little fatter, but hit the ball well. I'm getting stronger, you know, and, you know, kickoffs was always a thing I got knocked for, and kicking off great, good hang time, good distance, and, you know, it's just, all I can do is wake up every day and try to get better, take one step forward. That's all I can do. You know, if I take a step back, it was not a success. And I think one of the main things that came out of me being unemployed, even though it's tough to admit to it as far as being unemployed, is I got a lot of family time, man. And I've seen some very close friends lose their mothers, lose their fathers in the last 9 months, and I wasn't playing. So I got a chance to hug my mother and father every day.
Good.
You know, and being 33, having some money, having some success, you know, I could be, you know, living in Vegas for 3 months and, you know, partying my tail off. I could be here, I could be there, but I choose to be at home with my mom and train every day. You know, I've had over 300 training sessions with my personal trainer since September, and, you know, it's sometimes twice a day, just what? Because, you know, I wanted to lose a certain amount of weight here. I wanted to be ripped up in case somebody saw me. I didn't want people to think, oh, he's an alcoholic, fat, out of shit guy that's just trying to kick and steal some money, because it's not me.
Right.
I know I have that perception at times. But if you look at me, if you see the work I do, then you understand. But if you don't, then you'll never know. So I'm hoping I just get another chance.
Well, Jeff, I certainly do appreciate you taking time on the Terrible Podcast. I'm willing to bet now, hopefully I'm going to get a post up and get this episode up on Friday. I'm willing to bet you get a couple of calls from the radio stations checking back up in you. Maybe your name gets circulated a little bit right here. Good timing right before training camp starts. And once a Steeler, always a Steeler. And best of luck to you. And I hope you find a gig this upcoming season. And thanks again for joining me on the Terrible Podcast.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, man, and much love to the city of Pittsburgh. I appreciate it, and I don't see myself playing 9 more years, so I promise you I'll retire a Steeler because I had a lot of success there and a couple of Super Bowl rings can never go wrong there.
And that's Jeff Reed, almost 9 seasons with the Pittsburgh Steelers, second all-time leading scorer with the Steelers with 919 career points, and we thank him for joining us on the Terrible Podcast today.